And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Andrew Beck and Max Cohen. This is another edition of the Cottage's Confidential Roundtable. We'll be discussing several subjects, and I look forward to speaking to my co-hosts in just a bit. But before we do anything, I have to welcome them both back to the show. First, Max, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Russ. It's always a pleasure to be on the show. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I look forward to doing this show with you. But before we do anything, I have to welcome the editor for Cottage's Confidential back with us. It's been 2 months, Andrew. Welcome back to the show.
It doesn't feel like it's been 2 months. I've just been all the football games and winter vacation. I've been time just flies.
It does, my friend. It certainly does. It's been a while. And what's interesting, we were just talking about before we started the show, that part of the show, we are actually going to be discussing the season so far. We actually did that back at the end of October. So now we're going to see how we feel about it 2 months later. So, and I got several topics there. We also have a good amount of transfer speculation, and we're also going to be talking about the Chris Martin situation as well. But before we do anything, guys, we have to discuss the recent article that was in the Daily Mirror today regarding Slavisa Jokanović. I'm just going to read the title and read the article to you. It's entitled, "Fulham Risk Losing Manager Slavisa Jokanović to Werder Bremen After Contract Standoff." The Cottagers have failed to agree to a renewal with the Serbian boss's current deal set to expire this summer. This is an article by John Cross. This is his article, directly from John Cross's article. German giants Werder Bremen are eyeing Fulham boss Slavisa Jokanović. Jokanović, 48, is getting admiring glances from the Bundesliga outfit as Werder Bremen are enduring a disastrous season and are stuck in a relegation fight. Former Watford boss Jokanović is out of contract at the end of the season, and formal talks have yet to begin over a new deal. That contract standoff has also alerted Malaga because Jokanović has been working wonders at Craven Cottage. Jokanović is getting plaudits for playing some of the most attractive football in the championship and is doing well on a limited budget. Fulham are hoping he will stay, but have yet to make serious moves to sign him up to a contract. That will be a major concern to Fulham fans who have been impressed by Jokanović's progress since he arrived in December 2015, leading the club to safety last season and then making great strides this time. Okay, that is the article from John Cross. Andrew, just give me your thoughts on what I just read to you and your overall thoughts on the situation with Slavisa here.
The first thing I want to say is we don't necessarily know whether it's been Fulham who hasn't been trying to get him to sign or if he doesn't want to re-sign, because, I mean, he's ambitious and he might not be wanting to sign if Fulham doesn't get promoted. He might not want another year in the championship. So that's something that we really don't know. I'm hesitant to really believe the links to Werder Bremen. They did start off awful. They lost their first five games. They fired their coach, and the interim manager lost the first game he was in charge of after that, but he was only in charge for 3 days for that game. And after that, they haven't been great, but they haven't been ridiculously bad. They've only lost, I think, four times in, like, I think, seven games, and they're unbeaten in the league in their last five. So,
yes.
So, I mean, he was named the official coach. He's got the interim tag taken off in October. So it's not really clear that they're going to be moving on from him at the end of the year. If they stay up and, you know, and they have the talent to stay up, and if they have the talent to finish higher or than they did last year, which I think was 13th, he very well might just get the job. So I don't know that I'd be that concerned about Werder Bremen, but Slavisa is the kind of guy who he does want to prove that he's a great manager at high levels. So if he got the opportunity to go to the Bundesliga or the Premier League or something, he probably would take that chance. So Fulham might have to overpay to get him to stay if they don't get promoted.
No, listen, it's a good point, Andrew. And what's interesting about this is, you know, it's funny, Dan Crawford from Hamian.com tweeted this out, just something similar that you just said. Ari Jokanović story in the Mirror. Alexander Nori got the Werder Bremen job in October, like you said. They are unbeaten in their last five games, like you said. So that situation might be in a controlled state, meaning that maybe this is something for the future. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. The same thing with the Malaga situation, Andrew, because there was talk about that. But who knows what's going on. But in the future, it does make you a little bit concerned if you're a Fulham supporter. So this is the time where I hope that they get the ball rolling on this. But what's interesting, what you said that I wasn't even thinking about, would he be willing to sign a new contract right now? That's very interesting. Max, I want to go to your, you know, I wasn't even thinking in those terms that maybe Savisa would wait because he's very ambitious, and if Fulham don't get promoted, maybe he would just see this out. What are your thoughts about what Andrew just brought up here? I wasn't looking at that way. In fact, I hope that's not the case, because they certainly want them to sign him up as soon as possible. But what do you think of what Andrew just said there?
Yeah, of course. That's a great point, because we really, I don't think we can afford to lose Slavisa at this point. He's such a vital part of what Fulham has become in the past couple months. And to lose a manager, he's instilled a new philosophy here, would be pretty disastrous. But I would think if Malaga comes knocking, if Werder comes knocking, probably unlikely, as Andrew said, and I probably agree with you. But if a big team comes calling from one of the European top divisions, can Slavisa stay? Is he going to stay? I'd like to think the answer is yes, he would stay. He'd be loyal to the club that's taken him in, and with an owner that's really backed him. Shahid Khan, I think, has backed him in the transfer window consistently. And another sign of loyalty is that the club is also backing him with the Chris Martin situation. So I think Fulham are in a very strong position this year. And if we don't get promoted this year, then we'll be definite contenders next year. I think that has to be enough, in my opinion, for Slavisa to stay at Fulham. Because okay, sure. I think there really is a real prospect of Premier League football in the very near future. And for him to kind of ditch his project at Fulham, what he's done over the past year and a half or so, would be, I think, contrary to what he stands for and really what he wants as a manager, which I think is primarily the Premier League.
Right. You know, I think he really wants to be a manager in the Premier League, and we could be headed in the right direction. Do we get there this year? I don't know. I hope we do, but it's a very interesting situation, Max, and something to really think about here. You know, he's building something here. And, you know, and I've seen some talk about this, some comments about this. His stance on Chris Martin doesn't sound like a manager who is looking to leave.
I'd certainly agree with that point. And just to further that, we've had to deal with a lot of managers in the past and players in the past ditching Fulham for, you know, pastures new. And I think the primary example of that would probably be Mark Hughes, of course, his famous ambition line that the club didn't have enough ambition. Right. And he left. And I think in terms of players, you can look at Clint Dempsey. You can look at really any player who left Fulham for a bigger club. And I think the fact of the matter is, most times people leave Fulham in hope of a better future, it usually doesn't go as well. Because at a club like Fulham, when you're one of the top people, whether it be a manager or a player, you're truly valued. And the fans and your fellow teammates and the board value you. And when you make that step up, you just don't have that. They don't have that same type of connection, same type of support, and that's where you see a lot of people struggling. So I'd really hope Slavisa would kind of take a bigger picture here and see that he's really truly valued. He's special at Fulham, and if he just stays, he and the club can both ascend to where they want to be.
Okay, very good and good points. And Andrew, I want to go back to you because again, I've seen this talk about the stance. Again, I've seen it. I've seen some comments from some Fulham supporters talking about how he's taken the stance with Chris Martin. That could be a sign. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe fans are reading too much into it. But to me, it does not sound like someone that is itching to leave. But you never know. His track record, he has jumped around a good amount of times. So I want to get your thoughts about the way that he's been acting this last month with this whole situation. And also, on top of it, if you are Shahid Khan, what would you be doing right now in regards to Savisa? Would you be trying your best to get a deal done right now?
Personally, what I would say we want to keep you. This is the offer we're going to give you, and just kind of put it on the table. Feel free to sign it when you've had a chance to dig it. I wouldn't try to pressure him because sometimes that can backfire on you. But right. Make sure you let him know that he's wanted. You give him an extension, probably another like 2-3 year extension. Give him a raise and say, "Hey, we're going to keep you." And then one important thing would be you might put in a clause: if you're not promoted in 2 years, you're free. One, you do get like a a big bump, and you can't be just, if you're fired when we get promoted, there'll be a giant buyout for that. But I still think he feels pretty hard done by the fact that he got Watford promoted and they just turned around and fired him and hired someone new.
That's right.
I know that what he really wants is to be a manager in the Premier League.
Right.
And I think that was, he felt really hard done by that. So you kind of give him assurances that that can happen again, that you want to keep him around, give him a raise. But don't pressure him into saying, don't give him the ultimatum, sign this or we're going to let you go.
Okay. Very good. And again, what's interesting about this, and someone also pointed this out on social media, that when you're near the end of your deal, say you just have less than 6 months left on your deal, if you're a player or manager, these things are going to start to happen. These stories are going to come, and it comes with the territory, and I actually agree with that. You know, I'm not saying that this story is made up. I don't believe it's made up at all. Andrew, do you agree with me on that, that this seems more of a situation that we would be more concerned after the season is over? Or are you concerned right now about this?
No, I wouldn't be concerned until January. I don't think there's really any way that he leaves during the year. I don't think there's any way Fulham would let him go unless Fulham goes on just a horrible run of form. Yeah. You know, the next, they lose like four games in a row and they're, 10 points away from the playoffs. Then they might be willing to let him go for a fee. But as long as there's a chance that they can make the playoffs, I don't think that they would let him go at all.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Max, your thoughts on this. Do you feel that we should see this through the, through January? And, again, it can happen anytime. I shouldn't say through January. It can happen, anytime up to the end of the season, something could happen, but I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening during the season. Do you?
I agree with you. I don't really see it happening during the season, and I really don't see it happening at all. I think, of course, as the contract runs down, as you guys said, there's always going to be speculation. And these newspapers, these websites, they kind of depend on these clicks. You know, they're going to want people, they're going to want headlines, are going to scare us Fulham fans and going to click the article.
It works.
Get them page views, and sometimes, what can you say?
Right. Right. And I want to clarify, and again, this isn't a player. So here I am talking about, will we make it to the end of January? We're talking about to the end of the season, because that to me is obviously the bigger issue. It's not, he could leave at any time. They could sack him. That's not going to happen, but he could try to force a move before the end of the season. Let's hope neither happens, because that means Fulham are headed in the right direction, guys. All right. Let's move on. Let's start with some transfer speculation, and I think we need to start with the Chris Martin situation. And I just want to mention that James Eade from Cottagers Confidential wrote a very interesting article that I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Told you guys off air that there are a ton of comments already on the article about Chris Martin, about the article. So please do check it out. All right, Andrew, to you. I want to get just your overall view of the Chris Martin situation. I will be sharing after you guys give your opening view on this, some quotes from Chris Martin in a little bit. But before we do that, I just want your overall thoughts on the situation with him.
Since I'm not really inside, I don't really know what's true and what's not. My speculation is that Fulham thought they were going to sign him permanently. They probably had an offer on the table for him that he wasn't entirely happy with. He might have thought he was worth a little bit more than that. When Steve McClaren gets the Derby job, Steve McClaren probably whispers through agents or something, hey, we'd really love to have you back, and we'll give you this new long-term deal, and we're going to get promoted, and you'll be with us in the Premier League. And that probably influenced him, and he's like, yeah, maybe I do go back, and they're willing to give me more money than what Fulham has offered me. And then he's trying to force a move back. And I think that's probably something along those lines. Now the question is, what do you do about it? Do you give in to his demands and let him go back? Do you match Derby's offer? I'm not really sure what the right solution is. And since Derby just bought a striker already this window, I'm not sure that they want him back anymore at all. So that complicates things a little bit further. At this point, I really don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, very good. Max, over to you. Your view of the Chris Martin situation.
Yeah, I just think under no circumstances they can fumble and go back to Derby just to help one of our major playoff contenders by giving them our star striker is not really an option for the club. But of course, that's the stance we'd all like to take. But in reality, it might be a little more complicated than that, because can you really have a player who we're paying that much? Languishing in the reserves, refusing to play for a club, is that a healthy solution for the next 6 months until the end of the season? Is that going to create a negative environment around the squad? You never know what a wandaway player. You never really want that in a team. But one solution I think we could look for towards is a couple years ago with Brian Ruiz, who had a very similar type of attitude, and even more so, in which he was basically said, "I'm not going to play in the championship. I'm going to try to force a move elsewhere to Portugal, to Holland." And he didn't get the move, and he stayed. And in the end, Kit Simmons brought him out from the cold, and he actually made a lot of appearances for us in that championship season, I think, in 2014-15. So that's one possible instance where, a player can kind of come back from the cold. But this one feels a little bit more personal, and I just can't see Chris Martin making another appearance at Fulham.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, I'm going to now read some quotes from Chris Martin. These are taken from the interview he did with Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reid at halftime of the Derby County match. When I heard this live. And then, of course, a few weeks later, we have the breaking story from The Sun that Chris Martin wants to go back to Derby County. So I went back and I thought about this interview, because it kind of contradicts everything that has happened since then. What has happened since then? Because I'm going to now read this. And he was asked by Jamie Reid, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact question, but he's asked basically if he'd like to stay longer than his loan, which was until the end of the season. Here is his quote. He says, "Yeah, for sure. I want to get my future sorted first and foremost, obviously being on loan, and I like to think I've taken the opportunity that was given to me. But from a player's point of view, being on loan, there's a little bit of uncertainty. And for sure, I like to try to wrap up something permanently as soon as possible. But obviously, it's not always that simple in football. We'll have to wait and see what happens, but hopefully something can get sorted." Those are the words from Chris Martin at halftime of the Derby County match with Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reid. And Jamie Reid asked him the question about would he like to see his time continue at Fulham after the loan, after his loan spell. And that was his answer. Andrew, thoughts on what I just shared?
What I was thinking before is that it could simply be that what Fulham has offered him on a permanent deal is less than he thinks he's worth.
Yeah.
But again, since we really don't know what's going on between Fulham and Chris Martin, other than what's being leaked by people with various agendas to the media, it's really hard to say one way or the other.
It's a very weird situation. Like I said, when all this news broke about him wanting to go back to Derby County, I just remembered this interview, and I had to listen back to it again, and it just really resonated. It's like, what has changed since then? And Andrew, you could be onto something. We don't know for sure, but I think this has to do. I personally think it could possibly. I shouldn't say I don't know. None of us really know, but it could possibly be that he's looking for a permanent deal with Fulham, and there's something going on with that. And none of us know. Max, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said about how you're surprised, because I
was totally surprised by this.
Yeah, I even saw an instance of him even after that, in a couple of days before the whole news broke out on Boxing Day at Ipswich, when he scored that amazing free kick goal, when he celebrated with Ragnar Sigurdsson after the second clinching goal.
Yep.
And that's not a, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, that's not a player who wants to leave. That's not a player who's unhappy. He looked like a player fully committed to the squad, fully invested in what Slavisa is doing, and just very happy with the way things are going. He didn't look mopey. He looked energetic, looked part of the team. He wasn't alone or isolated. And what must have changed in those two or three, 4 days, we really don't know. It's an interesting case, and I mean, he was crucial to the team. He didn't have the best start, but he just started defining his goal scoring form, and having a target man like Martin on the team is vital for the kind of the way we play, in some ways, and losing that is going to be an issue.
Yeah, listen, it's, you know, it's an interesting situation that things are going on right now. And Max, something that Mike Gregg said to me on the last show really resonated as well, because he offers something unique. We don't have a player that can hold up the ball like him right now at striker. We don't. You know, Matt Smith is really does not offer what Chris Martin does, you know, being that central hub. And in the last match, we saw Fulham go to three at the back. And Mike just threw out the situation that maybe this is Savisa tinkering. You know, again, we're just throwing it out there that maybe he's tinkering with potentially going to have the ability to go to a 3-5-2 to play a different way. You know, if they cannot find a striker or the Chris Martin situation doesn't work itself out, that they have to, say, find strikers to play a different way. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's an interesting idea from Salisa. I think it's another example of how versatile he is as a coach and that he can change his system. But I'm not really sure if changing the system is the best way, because we have had a lot of success with the way we were playing before. But the 3-5-2 has also reaped benefits for us as well. He changed that at halftime in the Ipswich match. It also really added a different level of threat to our attack. So I think, that until we get a replacement, that might be the best solution.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, we now have some speculation I want to go over with you. Funny, we're talking about striker. I'm now going to share some information about a link to a striker. And I'm going to go to you first, Andrew. There are reports in Austria that Fulham are linked to striker Larry Ayoube of Austria Vienna. What are your thoughts on this speculation? Have you checked this out at all?
Yeah, I've checked it, but I've done as much scouting as you can for someone who plays in a league that isn't on TV and a lot of their aren't really optostats kept for. He seems to score and assist in about half the games he's in. And from what I can see, he's kind of just a younger version of Sone Aluko, would be the best way to describe him. They're about the same size. They're both, you know, guys who can play up top or on the wing. And that's kind of what I see him as. And since he's only 23 and he's scored about everywhere he's been, I think it's probably a pretty good move. The only hesitation is that obviously the Austrian league isn't as good as the championship, so it would be a step up. But he has scored even when Austria Vienna has been in the Europa League. So, I mean, he has faced a little bit higher competition and was able to excel against them too. So I'm not as worried about it. Plus, Austria Vienna is one of like the two or three clubs in Austria where their players are usually a step above everyone else in the league.
Okay, very good. And listen, I've watched the YouTube video. I don't know if you guys have. And he looks like a different type of striker than we have right now. He has a good amount of pace. And again, it's a highlight reel. We've all seen him before. But it's interesting because he would offer, based on what I've watched, you know, again, it's what I watched. I'm not watching the Austrian league on a regular basis. But what I watched, he looks like he would offer something different at the striker position. Max, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's pacey. His stats are good. He scores a lot. And in the added benefit of playing in the Europa League, which is a higher quality than his domestic league and probably a little higher than a championship, I think that's a good sign. And I think it's also a good sign that the club is trying to invest, because this striker probably wouldn't come cheap, considering he's young, 23, and he's a lot of potential. So it might be a pretty significant purchase, which does show that the board is backing Slavisa, and hopefully with the backing in the January transfer window, significant spending, that can convince Slavisa that the club really does support him. Right. And just buying strikers, I think, is always a good thing for a team that creates so many chances, as we've seen, but really struggles to find the goals that we deserve. We've seen in game after game this season in which we've dominated the match, we've dominated the opportunities, and we just can't find the killer goal or the finishing touch to show our dominance truly.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, here's another piece of speculation that involves a center back. Max, I'll start with you. Reports in Italy suggest Fulham are interested in center back Thomas Hertel, I probably said that wrong, of Udinese. What are your thoughts on this speculation?
Yeah, in this article, it says that Swansea City looked at him when they were trying to find a replacement for Ashley Williams this summer. So that kind of gives you an idea of how he's pretty well, he's a pretty big figure, and that a Premier League side was trying to sign him. As well as we do need to strengthen our defense, you know, with Kallas out and Reem and Sigurdsson not quite up to that quality, in my opinion. Also, he's a target of Brighton, so that might be an issue. If you're choosing between Fulham and Brighton, obviously we'd all say choose Fulham, but Brighton are in the automatic promotion positions. So he might very soon be Premier League club next season. If that might influence the decision, but he does play for Udinese in the Serie A, which is one of the top European leagues. So I'm sure he'd be a valuable addition to the team.
Okay, very good. Andrew, your thoughts on this speculation?
From what little I've seen of him, he seems kind of, he's probably better than Tim Ream, but he seems center back kind of in the mold of Tim Ream, except for he's right footed. He kind of splits his time between right back and center back. He's kind of a big defending stay at home right back, the way that Tim Ream played left back that way. I could see a very interesting situation where if we were truly were going to go three at the back, where you could have him on the right, Ream on the left, and Kallas in the middle, and when Kallas is out, you could even have Sigurdsson in there. Yeah. I think a lot of what Slavisa tries to do depends on these guys being able to play the ball out of the back, and that's something that Hertu seems to do well at. That's why I think that's the reason you've seen Ream play more often than Sigurdsson and even Maddle in the back, is because Ream can actually, you know, play the ball out of the back. He's a little bit more comfortable with it at his feet, and having another guy who can do that would be very, very beneficial.
Okay, very good. This is something to follow, you know, again, just the center back position in general, but it's very interesting analysis on this player. And that makes sense, you know, to want a player that can do, you know, play the ball out from the back, a little bit, you know, like you said, a little bit like Tim Ream, but, you know, I see where you're going on that, because then you could, you know, again, you could, in essence, play three at the back. I think that might be something we might see a little bit more. I certainly would not be against that formation, the 3-5-2. I would like to see that again. All right, guys, we got to talk about this, because there's been a good amount of speculation over the weekend. And I've even saw it as of late today. I did see some speculation about this. There's been a ton that Newcastle United have made an inquiry in regards to Tom Kearney. Andrew, thoughts on this?
I don't think that there's really much to this. I'm sure that they actually have made an inquiry, but I'm almost certain that it's not for this year. I don't think there's any way Fulham would let him go. And frankly, I don't think Newcastle really need him or need to spend the money. I mean, they're almost assuredly going to get automatically promoted. And this may be more along the lines of, hey, if we get promoted and you don't, this is what we'd like to offer you for Tom Kearney, because we think he could play in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I think it's much more likely that it was sort of that sort of situation where they're already thinking ahead to next year. Because I just can't see Newcastle spending $10 million on him in the window when they're going to go up no matter what. It's £10 million. I don't know what that actually is in dollars now.
Yeah, and what's crazy, I saw a journalist say that Fulham won £20 million for him. I don't know, you know, again, it's all speculation. Who knows? Everyone has their sources, but I just don't see this happening. I do believe that they might have inquired. I don't see Fulham selling him. And, you know, because he's so integral to what they do, why would you do that? Why would you do that? The money's not going to help you as much as the player will. That's the way I look at it. Money's great, but you need the player. Sorry, you need the player. So that's where I'm going on this, Max. I think they inquired, but I don't think it's going to go any further. What are your thoughts on this?
The fact of the matter is Fulham's not going to sell their captain, not going to sell probably their most, as you said it, their most vital midfield player, a player who's he feels like a Fulham veteran considering how new our squad is. He's only been here since probably 2 years, I think, but he feels like a part of the club. He means a lot to the fans. He always gives his all. He's simply one of our best players. I can't see us selling him to Newcastle.
Yeah, neither can I. But again, it's out there. And listen, it's the silly season. Like I said, you know, you're going to have, you know, people that people that are on shorter contracts, you're going to be hearing about them, but you also hear about your best players too. And you know, someone said to me once, if you don't hear about speculation about players on your team, then you probably don't have good players. And that's actually a good point, because it generally will happen in January. It certainly happens over the summer. It's going to happen. It's the silly season. You're definitely going to hear the talk. If it goes beyond that, then you have to see. In this case, I just don't see it. And, you know, I don't see Savisa moving either. You know, and again, just to clarify, you know, again, he's under contract to the end of the season. You know, a team could come into for him now. They could come in a couple months. I just don't see Fulham letting him go, because you're building something here. But this is something that we need to watch. We need to see if they can get him nailed down to a longer-term contract, which I hope that they do. All right, guys, before we move on talking about speculation, one thing I do want to mention, because I did read those quotes from Chris Martin that were from halftime of the Derby County match. If you want to listen to it, you can go to omni.fm/shows/FulhamFC, and you can listen to this interview. It's about 7 minutes and 55 seconds long, and the part with Chris Martin is the last couple minutes. I'm talking about the part when they're talking about possibly wanting to stay longer, when they ask him about, when Jamie Reid asked him about that. I believe that's the last couple minutes, so please feel free to check that out. I've also posted that interview on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, so you can check that out as well. All right, guys. Now what I want to do is talk about the season so far. We did this 2 months ago, Andrew, you and I, along with David Kettlehake, but I want to revisit it now, because we're just past the halfway mark. So I want to see maybe if any of your thoughts have changed, and certainly want your thoughts on these topics too, Max. So let's start here, because we did this 2 months ago at the end of October. So here's my first topic for you, Andrew. Just give your overall assessment of how Fulham have played halfway through the season, a little bit beyond halfway through the season.
So far, I think it's pretty good. I mean, at the beginning of the year, if you told me that at halfway through the year, Fulham would have the third best goal differential in the league, they'd be 6 points out of the playoff spots, and they have a chance to be better than they were early in the season, I probably would take that. I mean, I would have said that's great. So it's really hard. I mean, it feels like when you like watching the season, you feel like, well, they could have just, if this and this and this had happened, there'd be just a little bit better in the playoff spots. But when you have to think about like what we were the last 2 years, if you just came down from the cloud before the season started and gave me where they are now, I probably would take it. Right. So I have to say that we have to be pretty happy with what they've accomplished so far, especially considering that they seem to almost have been improving as the year has been gone on. So that they're still actually probably, I think the last math showed, they still have like a 20-25% chance of making the playoffs just based on what's happened so far. And that's not bad, you know, and if they keep playing better, they can improve those chances.
Absolutely. Max, over to you. I definitely want your thoughts of the Fulham season so far. I've actually said this when we did our mid-season review with Mike Gregg and David Holly. I've actually said Fulham, I think, have, believe it or not, underachieved, because I think that they've left so many points out there that, you know, again, some of these draws could have been wins. We could be higher up the table right now. We could be closer, much closer. We could be in the top six right now. I think they've left points, so believe it or not, I'm happy with the improvement, but I think that they have actually a little bit underachieved.
I think what you certainly said about the points being dropped is a huge concern, and something I definitely agree with. I mean, you just look back, I'll list some of the matches, you know, the Burden game, Burden Albion home, that's a 1-1 draw, that's a win, you have to win there. Of course, the Wolves match, how we gave it that 3-1 lead. Even the two matches against Brighton, which we dominated the play and should have won, both of those are losses. You just look at so many matches across the year where we've dominated and we haven't got the 3 points, which really does make the difference. Of course, the Derby match more recently. Yep. When you're up in the top half, those type of matches the draw when it should have been a win, the points dropped when you really should win at home, but you really draw. Those make the difference, and that's probably why we're 10th and not 6th. That being said, compared to the last three, four years of being a foam supporter, those last years, this has been the best year.
Oh, totally.
This is the only season
of course.
Where we haven't been fighting for relegation. It's the only season where we've actually probably won more games than we've lost at this point. The only season where you really feel positive about the clubs going in the right direction. Whereas for the past 3 years, you could argue everything's been downhill. From a Premier League relegation battle to now to a Championship relegation battle, we finally bucked that trend and we're definitely on the up now. And we've been playing some great football, yet people have to appreciate. And that, if just the highlights, the one clip Fulham posted from the Cardiff match on Twitter that I saw, just the flowing move that led to the Johansson goal. I can imagine playing that type of football a couple years ago. It's superb. And the players we have are real quality that we have on our team. We really do have a great squad. So we've played well. We haven't quite gotten the results that reflect that. But I mean, we're 10th right now. We have a game in hand. And we are just we're just 6 points off the playoffs with that win. Might be 3 points. We're still very much in it. I think I'd have to say I can't complain.
Okay. And, you know, I definitely see where you're coming from, you know, especially the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, this is such a marked improvement. I guess I've gotten a taste of it, guys, and I just see that, you know, we could just be a little bit better. You know, I'm talking about points-wise. Play-wise, I think they played very well, but they've left points out there. And I'll even say, you know, they've left situations that they probably really regret. And the one that stands out to me is the QPR match. The QPR match, please. You know, they lost that, and that was, you know, that again was a bad situation. I hope they right that wrong when they play QPR away coming up, because that's that could end up being a big match. All right, Max, right back to you. Which match so far in this first half of the season, a little bit longer, has given you hope that we're headed in the right direction? Which one stands out to you?
It has to be the match. It's a personal, special match for me because the match I saw away at Ipswich on Boxing Day. A match in which, in past seasons, you know, a tough away game at a kind of a hostile environment against a team that we've not had a lot of success against, Ipswich, might be a big opportunity to slip up. But this time, we came away with a 2-0 away victory and completely dominated the match, and it could have been much more. And this is the type of result that Fulhams have not been getting over the past couple years. The result where, you know, they might just lose, might turn in a mediocre performance, but every player I saw that day gave their all and just a complete dominant performance. And that showed that we're not the Fulham of old. We really can have a chance of being promoted. We can make the playoffs, and we can compete with almost every team in this division.
Okay, very good there, Max. Okay, I'm just going to bring Andrew back on. Andrew, which match so far this season gives you hope that we're heading in the right direction?
It's probably the 5-0 win against Reading. I thought that was probably the best we played all year, just overall. The chances seemed to go in on that game, and that was just about as well as you can ever expect a team to play. It's a little bit, I mean, Reading's really high on the table right now. The advanced stats say that they shouldn't be, which is a little bit disconcerting. They seem to be one of those teams that just keeps getting lucky and lucky and lucky, whereas Fulham have not been getting as lucky over the year. And I'm hopefully that a little bit of that turns around for us in the second half. Maybe a few times we're on the reverse end of some of those games where the other team's like, how did we lose that again? Because we just haven't seemed to have very many of those this year. And those things tend to even out over the course of the year. The thing that really gives me hope the most, though, is that from the beginning of the season, the advanced stats have said we're in like the one or two best offenses in the division. And right now, I think we're ranked number two, just slightly behind Newcastle. I think they're expected to score 1.63 goals a game, and Fulham is scoring 1.61 goals a game. So our offense has been great. But what's amazing is that if you look at the defensive statistics, the line is just a line going almost straight down. Whereas at the beginning of the year, we had a pretty bad defense, and it's been slowly getting better and better and better to where now we're the 14th ranked defense the year. So overall, by the expected goal differential, we're the fifth best team in the division. Wow. So when you're saying is like you think that they could be five or six, they really should be five or six because that's about how well they've played. But the fact that they've been getting better as the year goes on, their defense, their offense has been slowly creeping up, and their defense has been slowly allowing less goals, gives me hope that they're going to improve over the year. There's not many teams who can say that both things are trending in the right direction. The only one who really can say that is Derby, but they had just such an awful start. They had nowhere to go but up.
That's a good point. And they've gone up. Okay, my friend, right back to you. Which match so far this season gives you pause, makes you concerned that, you know what, we still have things to work on, which they do. Which match showed that to you?
I'd almost just go back almost both games against Derby County because they had opportunities to kill those matches off, and they just didn't do it. And then in the second match where they lost, they had
Brighton, right?
Brighton.
Yeah.
Brighton. They had chances to kill those games off, and they didn't do it. And then they somehow gave up goals in like the only chances that Brighton created in the entire match. And it was like just so frustrating. I know it's the way soccer is. Sometimes that happens. It's a low scoring game, and Brighton has one of the best defenses, so it's really hard to score more than one of them. But those were just the most infuriating games because you felt like if Fulham had just scored one more time in one of their good chances, both those games would have gone the other way.
Listen, it's good to point out both of them because I'm going to single out the first one because I thought that was a chance to really make a statement. And what it also showed, Andrew, and then I'm going to go to you, Max, because I want to get your view on this. And we've talked about this already on Cottage Talk. Teams that find ways to win, that have that killer instinct, I think that showed that they just are still lacking that killer instinct, Andrew, to put a team away. A team that's good, like Brighton, I don't think Brighton are more talented than Fulham. I just think that they know how to win. Do you get where I'm going on that?
A little bit. Sometimes I think we put too much into that, and sometimes it's just, you know, luck. You hit the post and they don't, and it's one of those things. But it does seem that Fulham often, although not as much this year, when something bad happens to them, they kind of look around a little bit more. Where I think a team like Brighton, maybe when something bad happens, they're like they kind of, you know, shrug it off and like, well, we'll handle it. But I would say, like, with a team like Brighton, where I can't remember how many goals they've only given up, just a few goals. 15 goals on the year.
That's right.
I was shocked that we played as well against them as we did. And I still can't believe some of those balls just didn't go in. It seemed like, you know, we had things hitting the post and great saves, and everything that could go wrong went wrong.
I hear you, my friend. Okay, I'm just going to put you on hold for just a second here. I'm going to go back to Max. And Max, which match stands out to you as one that gives you pause, that concerns you? I totally agree with Andrew. He talked about both Brighton matches. I'm gonna single out the first Brighton match because that to me was a lost opportunity. Which match stands out to you that tells you we still have things to work on?
Another one of those lost opportunities, I'd say, is Wolves away.
Okay. Good one.
Of course, 4-4 final score, crazy game. But in which Fulham went down 1-0 and fought back 3-1, and then at that point, at 3-1, we were playing amazing football. We were dominating. We were doing so many things we've seen this year. We get all the chances. And then at 3-1, something happened. Something just clicked or something. And once Wolves got that second goal to make it 3-2, you had a sinking feeling. And every Fulham fan on Twitter, on social media, said the same thing at the moment, which is, we're going to blow this. And that's a worrying trend, is that when you have a lead, you have to keep the lead.
Right.
And you can point to many other matches this season. also the recent Darby at home match, and as well as the Brighton match, where you take the lead and you don't get the 3 points. And if you take a lead in a match in championship, you have to see it through, or else you're not gonna get promoted. And that's one thing that I would like to see change in the second half of the season, is when we do take the lead, when we are clearly the better team, we have to capitalize. We have to see that through to the end.
I'm glad that you brought up the Wolves match. I was trying to block that one out, Max, honestly. listen, they showed resiliency getting that goal at the very end, okay? So that was a positive, but they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. That's the bottom line. And I'm glad that you singled that out. I'm glad that Andrew brought up those other two Brighton matches, and because I think those are matches, again, lost opportunities, and we keep going back to that. All right, Andrew, I'm going to bring you back on. And I want to get your player of the season so far. You know, there are a couple players here that you could go with. I'm curious which one you would have as your player of the season so far.
I think the last time we talked, I talked about Kevin McDonald a lot.
Yes.
I still like him a lot. but this may be sort of – Stefan Johansson has been kind of just amazing. Ever since – I wasn't – enthused when we bought him. I thought, you know, he was good depth of the position, and his first appearance for Fulham, getting pulled after I think it was like 30 minutes as a tactical sub, that kind of made me wonder if we just made a mistake in buying him. But once Lavisa kind of made the change to put him in the midfield instead of Scott Parker, that's kind of when the switch kind of clicked for Fulham, and they started playing a lot better. And I think a lot of that has to do that Johansson will try to be a little bit more aggressive in his passing, whereas Scott Parker will always take the more conservative approach. He won't lose the ball and he won't make a mistake, not going to do something necessarily that's going to be make it goal dangerous. And Johansson is willing to, you know, to try a long ball, try a long cross or a long switch or shoot from distance, and his shots from distance are pretty good. And he's kind of, to me, been the key. Everyone else was kind of doing what they needed to do, but once they plugged him in, he was just like the missing piece to the attack.
Now, very good there about Stefan Johansson. Definitely can go there. I was actually thinking, you know, Johansson, some might even say Tom Kearney. You could also say a very valuable player has been Tomas Kalas. So there are several players you can talk to, but you can't go wrong with talking about Stefan Johansson. Okay, Max, over to you. Who's been your player of the season so far?
I gotta agree with Andrew. I gotta say Stefan Johansson. In the couple matches I saw live, especially Ipswich, he was just everything you want in the central midfielder. Solid at the back, adventurous going forward, always hard in the tackle. He started out all of Fulham's attack. Everything came through him. And he's become a fan favorite. I think that's a great point to mention that, you know, his first match ended in disaster. That's kind of a good way to show that, you know, you can recover, that you just sometimes players need just a little time to settle into a squad. But while we're talking about players, that's the next question, sorry. I'm just going to talk about the disappointment a little bit early.
Yeah, go ahead. Go right into it.
The two big names that we brought in over the summer, Niskens Cabano and Josebet Sanchez, totally ineffective. And that's one of my main disappointments for me, because so much is made of those two players about how they really could transform the way Fulham been playing. And they featured, but barely. I don't think either of them have made a contribution of note all year. And that's very disappointing for me.
Okay, and those are two good choices. I'm going to bring Andrew back on, because you just led right into what I was going to talk about. I wanted to get your disappointment so far. This is your biggest disappointment. And Max went with Josebet and also Niskens Cabano. How about you, Andrew?
I think my biggest disappointment would probably be Josebet, just because he has literally really done nothing. He hasn't been able to get on the field. With Cabano, at least, I feel like he hasn't got on the field because he's blocked. He's made the bench. He's had some substitute appearances.
He's got Ayite in front of him.
And Ayite has been played so well, and Kearney has played so well, and Aluko has been played. It's really been hard for him to get the pitch. Josebet, we were all thinking, oh, yeah, he could take that Johansson spot. He could move around, spell Kearney. And he just hasn't even, you know, been making the bench. So that's really, really disappointing for me. I feel like Cabano, if it wasn't for the Africa Cup of Nations, would have gotten a lot of time over this this period. But again, he's gone for that. So the other guy who's been kind of disappointing to me is Sigurdsson. I mean, he's played well at times, but when Kallis has been out, it's just he seems to fall apart without Kallis. And he doesn't seem that comfortable to me when he's got the ball at his feet. And sometimes I've seen him get beat in the air a few times. And I was pretty high on him coming in, and I'm a little
underwhelmed.
A little underwhelmed in the way he's played this year.
That's a good one. That's a good one, because I've heard people talk about Sigurdsson and complaining about that he doesn't jump either. That that might be why he gets beaten in the air, because I don't think he jumps that much. So. You know, and I will tell you a player that's actually improved that a little bit, Andrew, and that's actually Tim Ream. Tim Ream hasn't, I think he's been okay. He's been okay. I think he's good with the ball at his feet. But something that I've noticed, I think he's been jumping a lot better this season than he did last season. So that's a positive to take out of that. All right, guys, to wrap up the show, I want a rating for Slovisa so far this season. I'll start with you, Andrew.
I think he's done about as well as you can expect him to. At the beginning of the year, I don't think he was quite sure what his best team was. And it took a little while to figure that out. And he's had a little bit of problems with when Kallis isn't available. He doesn't really know what the best center back pairing is when Kallis isn't there. But a lot of that's just because, Kallis has been injured, and with Kallis is there, he seems to know what he's doing. So I'd say, he's an 8 or 9 out of 10 if I was going to rate him on that scale. I don't think there's many managers who would have been able to handle this season much better than he has.
Okay. And if you were to rate him, say, 0 to 10, what would you give him?
I'll go like 8.5.
Okay, very good. Max, over to you. Give a rating for Slovisa.
For me, I'd say he's a 9 out of 10. The way he's transformed the side into playing the right way, the way that he wants to, has been very impressive for me. And he's really turned us around from where we were last year, in bottom half of the table to right half of the table. That's impressive. And a main thing that's really endeared him to me over the past couple of weeks is his handling of the Chris Martin saga, in which he said that, listen, I remember a famous quote was, "We are not a train station," and you can't just leave when you want. We're a club. We're the oldest club in London, he said. And that just means a lot to show. That's another reason I don't think he's going to leave, is the way he's dealt with this. He seemed very committed to the club, and he seems personally offended at what Chris Martin has done. And that shows a manager who really fights for anything, to stick up for his players, to stick up for the fans. And he's been our best manager in quite some time. So 9 out of 10 so far.
Okay, very good. All right, to wrap up the show, I always like to get final thoughts. Max, I'll start with you. Final thoughts before we go, my friend.
We have a big, big couple weeks ahead of us as Fulham fans.
We do.
Barnes and QPR next two matches. Then Reading, reschedule, and Burton away. The month of January can be huge for us. We can push on. We can easily win 3 out of these 4 matches. And if we need to go on a run. If we go on a run, I think in a couple months' time, we can be looking very realistically at a playoff position.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right. Andrew, I'll bring you back on. Final thoughts, my friend, before we go.
I'm kind of in agreement with Max there. The coming up schedule, it's busy, but it's not impossible. Barnsley is probably the best it sounds weird saying that. Barnsley is probably the best team we're playing in this spell. QPR has been awful lately. Reading, although they're high up on the table, has just done it with smoke and mirrors. But Burton Albion is not a good team, and Birmingham City really isn't a very good team this year either. There's no reason why we can't win all of those games.
The matches are there, Andrew.
They're there
for them.
So, I mean, suggesting that they'll win them all is kind of crazy, but yeah, if they come away with this front with 9-10 points, something like that, they'll be right back in the playoff picture. Pretty easily, I would wager. The one thing that gives me a little bit is that we'll have those FA Cup fixtures coming up. I kind of would have been okay with them just, punting on the FA Cup this year myself,
Okay.
but it looked like Cardiff punted more than we were willing to punt. But the FA Cup fixtures could make for some fixture congestion coming through the season. But if we get through January, I will say with 7, 8 points minimum, I'll still say that the championships or the playoff championship playoffs are something that we can try to look forward to.
Okay. Before we go, this is something that Mike, Greg, and I talked about. We're looking at the I'm sorry, the next 10 matches. Next 10 matches are crucial. All these matches, I think, are winnable. So I'm going to give you a slate of 10 matches. If you check it out, you will see. Again, there've been a few that I have switched around because now you have the Reading match in the mix now. But I'll give you the next 10 matches. 30 points available. How many points do Fulham need, Andrew, do you feel, in the next 10 matches to be comfortably in the top six?
I'd say probably 15 or more. If you're getting 2 points a match, you're doing
Yep.
in the championship, you're doing really, really well. And I think some people are going to fall out of the top six. Reading might be too far ahead. Reading and Huddersfield might be too far ahead. But I don't think Sheffield is necessarily a
I think
great team.
I think
I don't
Leeds
think
is going to fall out.
Leeds is a great team, although they do have a good goal differential. But if you look, like Reading's goal differential is 4, Huddersfield's is 2, Sheffield Wednesday's is 4. These aren't great teams that we're talking about up there. So the chances of them continuing to play at the pace that they're playing at is probably not that likely. So if you start getting Fulham playing at 2 points a game for a big spell up to 51 points, I think they pass a couple of those teams. My guess would be that it's Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds probably are the two that drop out, but it wouldn't shock me if Huddersfield and Reading just fall apart and lose, 4 or 5 games in a row.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, I'm just going to put you back on hold one last second. Max, over to you quickly. Next 10 matches. How many points do you think Fulham need?
I'd say 20. 20 points would be a good marker. Of course, it's a lot to ask, but that being said, it's a lot to ask to get promoted in the championship. But I really do think Fulham can put it on together. I'm just looking at the goal difference statistics now. There's a top two, Brighton Newcastle, miles ahead, everyone else with 25, 28. And then the team with the second best goal differential is Fulham with 11. And that's the best out of anyone outside the top four. Sorry, top two. And that really shows you how good of a team we are. We also only have 6 losses. Again, that's right up there in the top five. We can have, this is a team that is good enough, as Andrew was talking earlier about the expected goals. We should technically be in the top five with the way we have been playing and what the stats say. So I don't think there's any reason we cannot put together a run in the coming matches, and that's gonna be crucial for the season. And I'm optimistic. I'm looking forward. I think Fulham can do it this year.
You know what? So do I. And that kind of goes along with my final thoughts, Max. And today actually is my daughter Samantha's 13th birthday. We are recording this Wednesday night. And I made a promise to her today on her birthday. She's become a Fulham supporter. She actually listens, believe it or not, to Cottage Talk, which is phenomenal that my daughter is listening to Cottage Talk. But I made a promise to her. I said, if we can get to Wembley, we're going to Wembley. So, Max, I'm not giving up that dream. I said it's a dream. I said if that would be your first match, would be to see Fulham play, would be at Wembley, and I still think we have a shot to get there. So I made a promise to my daughter today on her birthday that if Fulham can get to Wembley, we are going to Wembley. So that's my final thoughts. All right. Real quick before we go. Andrew, back to you. Just tell everyone where they can reach you on Twitter, and please talk a little bit about Cottagers Confidential.
You can reach me. I'm AR Beck. That's ARBECK on Twitter. I also am usually the one manning the Cottagers Confidential Twitter account, which is Cottagers C. on Twitter. Cottagers Confidential, you can find us on Facebook, and then it's just cottagersconfidential.com. You'll get rerouted to cottagersconfidential.sbnation.com, but it's all handled automatically. We're trying to have at least one story up a day. We don't always manage that, but you know, a few stories a week. And we'd love to have you read our stuff and get feedback on it. That's the most important thing you can do. Yep. Is just, you know, leave us feedback. Add us on Twitter when we do a story, leave a comment. Let us know, like, if we're doing something, if you enjoy what we're doing, or you want us to focus on something else. Because when you just write and you don't know what people are, you don't get any feedback, it's sometimes hard to keep it going because you don't know if what you're doing is connecting.
Yeah. Listen, you've got some great writers that write for Cottagers Confidential. Like I just mentioned, please do check out the article today, A Cottager's Contemplation, Martin, Should He Stay or Should He Go? By James E. James writes a great deal. Some good stuff. Max, obviously, is a writer for Cottagers Confidential. David Kettlehake. I can go on and on. And, of course, you're the editor, Andrew. You do a phenomenal job, so I definitely recommend everyone go to cottagersconfidential.com. Max, tell everyone how they can reach you, my friend.
You can reach me on Twitter at Max P. Cohen, and you can check my articles on cottagersconfidential.com. So throw me a follow, tweet at me, tell me what I did wrong, tell me what you agree, disagree with me, anything, yeah.
That's great, my friend. Again, thanks to both of you for joining me. I've enjoyed this. It's been a long time since we did an episode of Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, and it was great to do. You guys were both fantastic, but it is time to go. For Andrew and Max, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.